is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Noah Snyder, the Tokyo bureau chief of The Economist magazine, who is in a Japan that is largely cautious, closed, vigilant about the pandemic. So those listening to us 100 years from now, we're inside a pandemic. We're aware that everything is qualified. Noah, a vigorous young man. Me, I'd like to think of myself as a vigorous senior man. However, thanks to Noah, I'm introduced to a term of art that Japan has pioneered in the world of long living. We look to long living in America as, good heavens, what are you going to do? Well, in Japan, they have answers. One of the ways they answer the long-lived population, noting the declining birth rate, noting the health available to people who subscribe to it, better treatment of old age ailments, such as cancer, such as Alzheimer's, certainly such as the ordinary business of keeping limber and fit. Japan is pioneering this. And one of the ways they do it that made it magical for me is they've come up with a term of art for people between the age of 65 and 75. In English, it's pretty old. Noah, what is it in Japan? Do they have a word for it?
That's a great question. I would have to go. I don't want to lie to your listeners. I'd have to go look up my notes to find the Japanese term for it. But the English one is it has a nice ring to it. So I hope it'll get adopted.
No, it's very nice. It's like a pre-owned car. You know, pre-owned. But they've got a lot of 65 to 75 year olds. What I learned from you is that they're learning. They have 80-year-olds, 90-year-olds. They're learning. We go to the town of Kajome. They're learning when your population hits 50% over 65, you make changes. What are they? How do they think about it, Noah?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that this is such an important issue, and I'm really glad that you've brought it up today, because it's one of those things that. You know, often people, I think, look at Japan from afar and they think, oh, well, this is this kind of shrinking, aging, graying place. It must not be particularly relevant to us. It's a reason, often a reason to sort of discount or dismiss Japan. But the reality is that it's coming for you too. In fact, it's coming for much of, if not all of the world too. And demographic change, it's one of these massive, massive forces. I mean, somewhat like climate change, it's one of these things that's sort of so vast and abstract that it's hard to wrap your mind around until it's not, until it really hits you, and until you start living in communities where you have to redesign everything from, you know, transportation to housing to shopping to healthcare. To, you know, your pension system to account for the fact that people are living much longer and having fewer and fewer children. And so one of the big things that Japan has, you know, recognized is that life doesn't and shouldn't end when people hit 65. This sort of threshold that we've established as old age or senior citizens in much of the world, kind of consigns a large and growing part of the population essentially to being an afterthought, to being sort of over the hill, as the metaphor has it in English. But what Japan has found, and I think, you know, much of the world is starting, else much of the rich world is starting and will be discovering in the coming years, is that older folks still have a whole lot to contribute, and the more active people remain into their old age, whether it's informal employment, whether it's in community groups, whether it's simply sort of taking care of their physical health, the more active people remain, the better their quality of life, the less strain they put on the healthcare system and the finances of the entire country. And so a lot of thinking is going into, and this is still very much a work in progress, and there's a lot of experimentation going on in different parts of the country. Some things are working better than others, but there's a lot of thinking going on in terms of how to redesign work for what one of my interviewees called the second life, the life that begins after 65.
That's very nice, second life. There are changes going on even in Kajome. And you introduced me to a 34-year-old who migrates to Kajome. And this has resonance here in the United States because during the pandemic, we're going through a time where young people are leaving the big cities and moving to what we call suburbia or exurbia. That sounds to me like what these young people are doing, leaving urban migrants, they're called. But they come to not enjoy the splendor of their remote salaries, but they come to start enterprises in Kajome, combining many opportunities in an old school that no longer has enough children to go there. And so he's turned it into what it seems like an industrial park where there used to be a school. Did I read that correctly?
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, I mean, it's quite telling, but you see people repurposing old schools in a lot of parts of Japan. You know, there are many places where there aren't enough kids left to justify having a whole school open, but there is a wonderful building, a wonderful space available for people to make something new of it. You know, the piece talks about Babame Base in Kajome, which is this kind of industrial park startup hub in an old school. There's also a long-term sort of preventative care facility in another town I visited in Toyama, which also is in a former school. So there's a lot of vacant buildings. They're called akiya in Japanese, and a lot of young people are taking an interest, as you mentioned. I think there is a parallel with what's happened during the pandemic in the US, you know, are taking an interest in ex-urban areas or rural areas because it's a different quality of life, a slower life, a cleaner life, a more manageable sort of scale of life. But some of them are also taking an interest because, you know, the folks who started Babame Base are, they see opportunities in and are interested in trying to sort of think through and design and understand what this newly shaped society is going to look like.
Socialization, dignity, respect, but socialization. Are the Japanese focused on these community centers or is that an afterthought? I noted that there was a swimming pool, but certainly human beings like horses are gregarious. They need to talk to other people. Do the Japanese intellectualize this? Do they understand that people living alone do not live healthy lives? And what you'd have to say is that there'll be a burden on the resources. Is that talked about?
Absolutely. And I mean, there is a sort of dark side to this whole story, which is a real epidemic of loneliness and isolation, especially amongst the elderly population. And you see, for example, you know, elevated suicide rates. I mean, Japan is still a place where with relatively high suicide rates in general, but they're especially high amongst the elderly. And oftentimes that is tied to loneliness and social isolation. So there's a real recognition of this problem. I wouldn't say they've solved it by any means, but there are a lot of people talking about it and a lot of people thinking about how to, again, to design community facilities, to design networks, to design programs that keep people socializing as they get older. The preventative care facility with the swimming pool that you alluded to, you know, a part of it is of course physical fitness, but the folks who run that facility talked a lot as well about the importance of socialization and the ways that, you know, having a common space, having a common activity can foster that socialization. And so they really see the benefits of, you know, getting together for an exercise class as twofold. It's not it's both about keeping the muscles stronger, but it's also about making and keeping friends.
The birth rate. Is there attention to the declining birth rate or the decline? We have one in the U.S., in Britain, in Europe, everywhere sees it. Russia sees it. You mentioned that young women are emigrating elsewhere. But is there a keenness to promote young families, size of young families? There's a program in Russia, I think, where there's subsidies for young families.
So there has been and is an enormous amount of hand-wringing about the birth rate. There have been various programs. The most sort of recent is a whole set of a new pandemic stimulus with handouts that are tied to the number of children in a family. There have been recent reforms that have tried to get fertility treatment covered by national health insurance. So there's a fair amount of effort going into the question or trying to raise the birth rate, but to little avail. And part of it is that many young people and especially many young women are what are called non-regular workers in Japan, so on sort of part-time precarious contracts. So there's a sense of sort of precarity that makes the prospect of starting a family even more terrifying than it might be in any case. So I think that's one area clearly where Japan has not done enough. They've invested a lot in trying to make early childcare more accessible, but it hasn't really tipped the needle on the birth rate. And so, they are looking at a situation where the population is projected to fall significantly. I mean, from about 126 million today to about 100 million in 2050, if current trends continue.
The future. Let's get to the challenges of the future. And there's governance, there's the economy, but there are challenges you can think about intellectually. Japan is a lab. It's the frontier. It's where the U.S. is or is going. Noah Snyder is the Tokyo Bureau Chief of The Economist magazine. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.